ब्रह्मादयो बहुचित्तं यदपङ्गमोक्षं कामस्तपस्तमचरं भगवत्प्रपानं सश्रीः स्ववासमरवृन्दवनं विहाय यत्पादसोभगमलं भजते अनुरक्तः. And the second part, which I guess here I'll chant, Tasya, where to go? Tasya ham abja kulishan kusha ketu ketai srimat padayar bhagavata samalan kritangi jen at shyarocha upalabdya tato vibhutim lokansa mahang vyasrajat utsmaya teen tarante. And translation, Lakshmi Ji, the goddess of fortune, whose glance of grace was sought by demigods like Lord Brahma, and for whom they surrendered many a day unto the personality of a Godhead, gave up her own abode in the forest of lotus flowers, and engaged herself in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. I was endowed with specific powers to supersede the fortune of all the three planetary systems, but being decorated by the impressions of the flag, thunderbolt, elephant driving rod, and lotus flower, which are signs of the lotus feet of the Lord. But at the end, when I felt I was so fortunate, the Lord left me. God.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you want us to repeat this? Or I already muted everybody on pre-conferencing.
That's okay. We can just go again. Go ahead with the purport.
Okay. So please, Prabhu, I don't want to hang up on anybody. So all of you on Skype still, you really, really need to make sure that you are muted right now so that Maharaj won't be disturbed in his incidental instructions.
Okay. Yeah. Purport. Actually, Prabhupada. The beauty and opulence of the world can be enhanced by the grace of the Lord and not by any man-made planning. When the Lord, Sri Krishna, was present on this earth, the impressions of the special signs of his lotus feet were stamped on the dust. And as a result of this specific grace, the whole earth was made as perfect as possible. In other words, the rivers, the seas, the forests, the hills, and the mines, which are all the supplying agents for the necessities of men and animals, were fully discharging their respective duties. So it's very interesting. We all consider these things to be dead. In our modern culture, the rivers don't have any duty. The ocean doesn't have any duty. The forest, the hills, the mines haven't got duties. I always remember that I was typing away on my Microsoft Word program, and I typed, the cow, he did this. And then the automatic grammar corrector came back and said, no, the cow, it did this. Because, of course, the cow can't be a person. The cow is a thing. Yeah. Somebody has your microphone open there. It's not disturbing me, man. Ah, we got it. Okay. Yeah. So this is the whole impersonalism of the modern world. What to speak of you know, forests and rivers being people, you know. Here's won't even let the animals be people like that. Another thing that impressed me was that Narada Muni, when he was traveling here and there, it also mentions mines. So mining, in some ways, in the modern world is a very, very, what's the term, abominable, you know, horrible activity. And every now and again you hear about a mine collapse and, you know, living in the dead, you know, 2 miles down. There's blood on the ground, the Cumberland and the Gap. Men living in the dead, 2 miles down. These mines just go deeper and deeper with sublevels and everything else. And of course, you know, control the water. Unbelievable hell. You at that, with lights and no air, and always, of course, the possibility of a collapse. Yeah. Wow. As I would guess, these kind of minds probably were saying at that time that the things were more just right on the surface, so it might even have been like open pit mining, and the pit may not have been deep even. It's more like, you know, turning the surface things to dig up beautiful crystals and diamonds and things like that. Yeah. Therefore, in other words, the rivers, seas, oceans, forests, hills, and mines, which are the supplying agents for the necessities of men and animals, were fully discharging their respective duties. Therefore, the riches of the world surpassed all the riches of all other planets in the three planetary systems of the universe. Another thing that struck me is that it says we're all supplying agents for the necessities of men and animals. And so especially with the last 2 days, we've been attacked by these mosquitoes.
Okay, I unmuted the ones that are still on free conferencing. Thank you, Prabhu. And most everybody's on Skype right now. So anybody want to ask a question right now or a comment?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is my humble obeisances. Hi, Krishna. Maharaj, this is to do with chanting of the holy name on beats, right? So we know that sometimes the beats, the notes on the last eight, I have some sign there, some piece of string to show that these are the eight beats. I'm aware of the astasakis, the eight gopis, but is that supposed to change our meditation in some way, those eight beats? And also, I was going to ask also about the size of the beat. Sometimes that, you know, the big beats start first and then you have they taper to smaller beats. So what's the significance of that?
I don't know. I just know that, you know, there's one way to describe, she describes Krishna chanting on the Krishna calling the cows. And probably you know this too, it's in the Bhagavatam and the purport then. Now it says that he divides them into four groups for the four primary colors with 25 subgroups of subcolors. And it, you know, probably says some people chant 108 Upanishads, some think of 108 gopis. Krishna was thinking of 108 groups of cows. So then the eight, white, red, black, yellow, with 25 subdivisions. And the eight can symbolize eight different groups of cows with special characteristics. And it says like barrel-shaped headed, heads with barrel shapes, one of the groups. So that's all I know. Other than that, just, you know, how the meditation changes or why they get bigger and smaller. I think I've kind of heard some people talking about that, but I don't need more details than that.
I had heard, growing up as a devotee, well, of course, I haven't grown up yet, but that because it's, you know, generally Tulsi, and they're from the Tulsi branch, and the Tulsi branch is obviously larger at one end and smaller at the other. And I've made quite a few sets of Tulsi beads, so when I take the branch, I actually do that as I cut the little branch into sections that will be made into beads. I kind of leave them in order that I cut them, and it's therefore they naturally go from bigger to smaller, just like a branch would, which is closer to the trunk of the tree, and it gets smaller as it goes out. And but anyway, that's what I never read it in Prabhupada's books, so that's for whatever it's worth.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much. That's interesting.
Well, one thing I was noticing in this verse here, I don't know if it's going to mention it, because now we're doing the third canto for this Bhakti Bhai Baba thing, and we had our meeting today with the Spanish devotees, and we're on the fourth chapter, and we're reviewing it. The first three chapters, four chapters are in the third canto, are, you know, how Uddhava, Vidura met Ma Uddhava, and he describes his meeting with Krishna and Maitreya, and his different experiences like that. And of course, it's all the same thing. It's all Krishna's Maushala Lila, and disappearance pastimes. And so then I was reading this and thinking that Bhumi was, you know, disturbed by it. And then Uddhava was also disturbed by it. You know? And Maitreya, he was still like a Jnana Mishra Bhakta. So he only when he saw the relationship between Uddhava and Krishna talking together, that he finally suddenly realized the importance of getting Krishna's association. We're doing these interfaith dialogues, and several times, you know, talking to Jewish people, they're not everybody, but this, most of the people we're talking to, scholars, and I think it's a pretty universal, not what's common, very common. Actually, it comes from Maimedes, as far as I know, maybe about 200 years ago or something. He wrote a book called Guide for the Perplexed, and he said that not only is God impersonal, he must be impersonal. You know? So I've explained two different times that God is always one step ahead of us. You know, we can see his footprints, but we can never catch up with him. That'll always be impossible for us like that. You know? So therefore, he's a person, but that's not so important because you're not going to have a personal relationship with him ever. You know, a little bit strange, you know, like that, how it all works. I think in some ways it seemed to be like, you know, the product of clouded thinking. You know? But that's so that kind of like, you know, Jnana Mishra Bhakti is there even in the modern world, that people are more concerned with good intelligence and this kind of thing. And ultimately, of course, I guess it has to turn towards sense gratification. It doesn't turn towards a personal relationship with Krishna. And sense gratification means nice married life, nice, you know, funny social relations, maybe avoiding gross things, you know, like that. You know? So Maitreya was just beginning to appreciate the association of Krishna. But people like Uddhava and Bhumi, and of course there's this question, the Prabhupada says that usually all the demigods are Sakam devotees. They have, they're devotees, very nice devotees, but they have desires, you know, like us. You know? And so Prabhupada says even Yamaraj, he's after the post. I'm the Yamaraj, you know. And so, you can read this chapter, this verses and Bhumi's ideas. Of course, Uddhava was also sent to talk to the Vrishabhasis about, you know, realizing how Krishna is present everywhere. Why should you feel a separation from him? But the Vrishabhasis wouldn't accept that, you know. You hear Prabhupada's preaching the same thing. But because there's a certain level of appreciation. Why? Because the Vrishabhasis, they had such intense desire to serve Krishna's personal form, not for their gratification. One place is saying that the gopis, they can appreciate that the girls in Mathura are very qualified. They're very nice girls. They're very sweet, friendly, sensitive. And it actually specifically says they know how to play crossword puzzles. You know? And the gopis can't even read and write, what to speak of doing crossword puzzles or these kind of things. So they think, oh, these girls are very qualified, more qualified than we are, and of course Krishna will forget all about us, having such nice girls to associate with. But they know that really Krishna can't be happy really any place but Vrindavan, completely. So then their anxiety is that he's not happy, you know. So they want him to come back so he can become happy. You know? So this is, sure if it's here in Bhumi's speeches or not, whether she's like a, because, you know, the other thing, of course, it talks about offenseless chanting. There's 10 offenses. And, you know, of course, Prabhupada said the 10th offense, inattentive chanting, if we just avoid that, then everything else will automatically follow. You know? But, of course, that means we have to give up this thought, that desire, this physical experience, and just keep focusing on the chanting all the time like that. And of course, it's very difficult, you know, impossible for some of us. Yeah. Yeah. So we try the best we can at different times. And of course, to maintain material attachments, right? And there's the thing, right? That's an offensive chanting, is we want something from the chanting. And so, of course, in the beginning, we think, well, I don't want anything. I'm a pure devotee, you know, like that. Then we hear about the four principles. Oh, my goodness, you know, that's insane, you know. I thought I could have, you know, different kinds of sense gratification within marriage and this kind of thing like that on my birthday or something. They say, nope. You know, the first time I really heard about the whole four principles, then I was just shocked. It was like, my God, that's not possible. You know? But then next thought was, well, so many other things, strange things have happened so far about these books and this movement. Well, maybe that's possible too, you know. So then we discover it is, you know. But the offensive chanting, as far as I understand, offensive service, that we want something from that. And again, of course, we don't know how much we want. If we actually saw how many desires we had, we become terrified at, you know, how much we have to give up and everything else. So Krishna, little by little, he reveals it to us. And of course, my mosquito consciousness, it's the same thing. Really, why is it happening? Because not just me, actually. I kind of came here on my own. I was just going to come here and investigate the tourism and the rural development here. Very nice project with a lot of possibilities. But, you know, the idea is anybody else wants to come, they can come. So about maybe about like 15, 16 devotees are coming from different places. And so I feel obligated then. Because after all, I'm the supreme friend. There we go. I'm the supreme proprietor, the supreme enjoyer, and the supreme friend. And so I feel like, my goodness, you know, all you devotees are here suffering from the mosquitoes and hot and cold and everything else like that, you know. And so not, you know, so then the attachments are there in terms of subtle attachments to honor, pride, prestige. And so experience of the mosquitoes is like really stimulating you. Well, how much of your own comfort should you abandon to try and see to the comfort of the devotees? And, you know, so many things occur in this subtle level of getting people from attachments. Every Krishna is controlling everything. Prabhupada says in the purport, there's nothing out of Krishna's touch. So therefore, as much as we can, we begin to accept everything that Krishna is arranging as being his arrangement. And then Prabhupada says we have to find the root of it. So, like, you know, think about it. People were asking, well, you know, are there mosquitoes in the spiritual world? That's when the thought is coming of like little, I don't know, pieces of dust or little flowers or maybe even like little like mosquito type things, which are very nice though, and they land on your skin, they feel nice. It's describing that there are, of course, bees, no? There are bees in Vaikuntha. And when the king of the bees starts to sing, then everybody else becomes quiet. Just listens to his singing like that. And of course, they all sing in a chorus. It must be really incredible sound. Sometimes when we're in Tennessee, there are these, every 3 years or 4 years, there are these katydids. And they don't bite, fortunately, because they're pretty good size. You know, there's so many, you know, that when they come out every 4 years, they grow and everywhere. Just, you know, on the side of the road, it'll be maybe even be like, you know, one foot tall pile of like the dead bodies like that on the side of the road, every place. And then they'll start making a vibration, and it will, that's the guys will pick up on it. There'll be like this vibration there, you know, woo 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 woo. The parrots, they memorize different songs and things like that. Yeah. And the insects, they're all probably combined together and produce beautiful chorus of, you know, music. Yeah. And in this world, if we're finding it unpleasant, that's because we're still attached, you know, and we have to give up this body. Of course, to maintain it for Krishna's service, you know, for Sankirtan, that's useful. Or for self-realization. Chapter 2 says that, no? Dharmasyahi apavargasya. The verse after that. Jivasya. That one should aspire to have just enough. And so enough, you know, enough tranquility of the body from different distresses and enough uncomfort. You know, not to forget God. But one should, you know, Prabhupada says that Prabhupada Saraswati, he says one should treat the senses roughly. You know, shove your body in the bath. You know, shove your body into the kitchen. You know, put it to work, you know, like a donkey, you know. And it'll feel good then. It'll be happy. You know? So we should treat our senses roughly. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says we should not become too comfortable. I noticed that. It was like that's a reaction now. Pretty much, it's almost whenever I feel too comfortable, I feel uncomfortable. You know, we should. The very nature of this place is we should always feel a little bit uncomfortable here. Of course, Gopakumar was uncomfortable even in Vaikuntha, uncomfortable, but very subtle, you know, very subtle. But still, in Narayan, pushed him to go on to all the way back to Goloka, like that. So maybe one more thing then. Just by kind of, it's a senseless chanting, and it's for the purpose of not getting sense gratification in this world, but other than this, for the purpose of self-realization, or to do our preaching. But also here it says, in this age of Kali, when everything is polluted, in the last paragraph, second half, in this age of Kali, when everything is polluted by contamination of Kali, it is instructed in the scriptures and preached by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, we can at once be free from contamination and gradually rise to the status of transcendence and go back to Godhead. Does anybody recognize a verse there? Does that remind you of one verse?
Harangi Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan?
No, not exactly. I think it went a little bit more closer. Okay, I got it here on my favorites.
The really? Last verse of Shuta Siksha.
Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.51. Srimad Bhagavatam 12th canto, 3rd chapter, verse 51. Kaler doshe nide rajan. Asti hi eko mahan
shamaha gunahai kirtan eva krishnasya mukta sangha param vrajet.
Yeah, so kalera means of the age of Kali. Dosha nide means an ocean falls, an ocean of nidas. O king, asti there is, he is certainly eko, one mahan, very great quality. There's one very good quality. It's amazing. Not just a few faults, it's an ocean of faults. Wow. But one very good quality. Kirtana, by chanting Eva, certainly, Krishnasya, the name of Krishna. Mukta Sangha, as Prabhupada says.
Hare Krishna.
One gets liberation. Yeah. And then Param, to the supreme spiritual kingdom. Rajat. This age of, O king, this age of Kali is an ocean of faults, but there's one very greatly good quality. Just by chanting the name of Krishna, one can get liberation and then go to the Param, go to the Supreme. Like that. And in the purport, after mentioning the innumerable faults of this age of Kali, Swami now mentions its one brilliant aspect. Just as one powerful king can kill innumerable thieves, one brilliant spiritual quality can destroy all the contamination of this age. It is impossible to overestimate the importance of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Especially in this fallen age. George, ready to move.
All right.
So, yeah.
Sorry, I'm interrupted. I'm sorry. Excuse me.
But that's it. That's about all I was noticing. Just the offenseless chanting. And also that this pub is paraphrasing this verse. You know, so many times you find it paraphrasing. So, yeah, you had some comments?
Okay, unless anyone else has a question or comment, I have kind of a complicated question. I hope you understand what you're talking about. We have somebody else. I'll step aside because I ask all the time. I'll step aside.
This may be simple. I hope it's a simple question, but you can just say it's inappropriate and hang up on me if it isn't. But I was wondering, how are you treating the mosquitoes? If they're on your body and biting you, are you like chanting and hitting them, or are you slapping them between your hands, or are you using bug spray, or are you just dealing with it? Because sometimes I have mosquitoes, and I always feel bad about killing them, but I try to chant to them, and I'm just kind of confused on that.
Yeah, I think that the first thing is just try to avoid the aggressors. You know, you put up mosquito net. I'm really impressed by Guru Pasaswam. He's really good at it. Amazing. He has this whole thing where he can, like, he told me, get ready to open the window, you know. And he has this whole thing with his Uttariya. He just can like, herd them, you know. Transmittal mosquito herd boy. He can herd the mosquitoes right out the windows. I can't do that. They always escape from me. He just really is, you know, really amazing power. So he chases them right out the window. And that's the best thing, is if you can just avoid them and let them go ahead and, you know, do their business someplace else. But then I heard another one, of course, is to create a stinky atmosphere they don't like. So the mosquito coils, they actually even seem to, like, maybe kill them. I'm not sure. But I don't think the more they seem to just drive them out, you know. That was our final solution here. The devotee got some mosquito coils and put it in the room. And then, they all disappeared. Before, there had been thousands, you know. And then the ones that were there were all like, you know, up against the screen, I guess, trying to, like, you know, breathe uncontaminated air, you know, like that. So try to avoid them, or else try to create an obnoxious atmosphere they don't like. And then, I heard Prabhupada said, you know, that you can classify them in the category of aggressors with weapons, and especially if they're like, you know, there's some contamination or possibility of malaria and stuff like that, you know. So in that sense, you know, killing them in varying degrees depends upon, you know, the effectiveness of the other solutions. And, you know, I also chant Hare Krishna and hope that, you know, Krishna can adjust the violence. Even like, you know, if you're killing carrots, taking a carrot out of the ground and offering it to the deities is also violence. But in the age of Kali, the priests, our priests can do gudger made whatever, like that. They can't do like horse sacrifices, but they can do carrot sacrifices. And Krishna adjusts it. You know? The carrots, probably said the plants, they have like a almost undeveloped consciousness. They're only half awake or something. So when they lose their body, somebody's not even quite aware of it. You know, they lost their body. And then suddenly they end up in a very nice body. And so then, wow, they think, well, that's very nice. You know, it was very good to be sacrificed like that. So same way, mosquitoes are pretty much, you know, they're not like out to get us or anything for the most part. They're kind of like flying vegetables. Their consciousness is so, like, you know, they're quite simple. And so when they leave their bodies, we're chanting, hopefully then Krishna can adjust it so that everybody is like, yeah, our service is not disturbed like that because of these reactions. That's what I understand.
Maharaj?
Thank you.
I have a comment and also a question about the mosquitoes. I went to India early last year, and one of my god sisters, before I left, she told me that I should take a lot of vitamin B. So I was taking a lot of vitamin B, and I even brought some with me when I went, and they stay away with that. Also, my husband, when I got there,
he was doing the same thing here.
Yeah, vitamin B. But my husband told me when I got to India that what he does is he has an electric fan going at night so that the mosquitoes, they can't stay still with the electric fan going. Mm-hmm. So that was our mosquito. But also, I also did hear when I was in the earlier days, that Srila Prabhupada said that when the mosquito lands on your body and starts to suck your blood, he's an aggressor. So you can, you know, you have to defend yourself from the aggressor. But, and then my question in regards to offensive chanting, you know, I was just wondering, because sometimes when I go to classes, not like this class, but like, you know, when you're in a temple room with a bunch of devotees, and sometimes I see devotees are chanting the rounds while class was going on, and I'm just wondering and I'm not trying to find fault or anything. I'm just in my mind. I mean, would that you know, what would you have to say about that?
Well, I got disconnected just about the point when your husband started talking. You see, you mentioned my husband. Husband said, duck the call,
my,
we'll get back.
My husband had told me when I got to India that the electric fan is very good for keeping the mosquitoes away at night. So when we were sleeping at night, he made sure the electric fan was going and we wouldn't get bitten. And I did hear
we were using electric fan. We had mosquito repellent. We were burning eucalyptus leaves, everything. But these are kind of like a different kind of guide. You know, mosquito repellent had no effect on them. And I'm not sure about the vitamin D, but also NIM. But yeah, we tried all kinds of stuff like that. And then finally we discovered this mosquito coils. You know, they didn't like that, you know. But so many techniques, you know. I knew the vitamin D was a long time ago about that, but I was always, you know, looking at using the NIM leaves, eating NIM.
NIM is considered. I had a question about chanting, Maharaj. I was just saying that sometimes, you know, if one individual, if individuals go to class and go to a Bhagavatam or Srimad Bhagavatam or a Bhagavad Gita or whatever class, and they have their hands in their bead bag and they're trying to finish their rounds while listening to class. Well, I was wondering what you thought about that.
Well, most of my thoughts about that come from having done it myself. When I was a new devotee, I would try and chant my rounds during Mandalaya Jeet and Kirtan. And, you know, you see Prabhupada so many times, I had his hand in a bead bag doing other things. But especially during class, I know Prabhupada was in, like, when you're in class, you should be in class. You know? And when you're other things, okay, maybe you're talking, walking, and you can mix it like that. But at least like the 16 rounds should be done attentively. And that should be the first thing. And of course, if something else helps that, like a tape of Prabhupada playing in the background or like this or that, okay, you've got to make some personal decision. But the thing is, yeah, the 16 rounds should be the focus during the 16 rounds. The class should be the focus during the class. You know? And then the arctic should be the focus during the arctic when we're doing that. But other than that, we can, by our nature, I think there's no problem like everybody mixing things. You know, someone, for example, maybe you're sewing, you know, you like to have a class playing in the background. So it's actually nice, you know, to mix things. But the thing is, you know, certain times there's a formality in our religion, the way it's been given to us, the Prabhupada, you know, the class should be the format, should be the focus, and then we shouldn't be chanting, you know. And then doing our Bs, we shouldn't be listening to tapes and stuff like that. We should be focused on the chanting. That's what I understand.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Maharaj, do I mind to slip in a question?
Certain, sir. Certainly.
Okay. I hope you understand what I'm talking about here. The focus of the verse and the purport is that when the Lord is here on the earth, then the impressions of his feet make everything so nice. It's just like a heavenly planet or better. So how to detain the Lord, and then Srila Prabhupada says, by the holy name, then everything will be nice. Now, there is the gospel of prosperity, you know, and some Christian groups really, not all, but some Christian groups, maybe not the mainstream, they really promote this, the gospel of prosperity, and, you know, there's the rise of the mega churches, etc. Now, I think we understand that there's a big difference between what's being said here in this verse and what the gospel of prosperity is, in that everything will be nice through Krishna consciousness, but never is promoting extravagance, whereas the gospel of prosperity in some Christian groups is really promoting, you know, be rich, God wants you to, you know, be extravagant, basically. But at the same time, my question is this. We did see that some devotees that were advanced and expert in their preaching, you know, like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he would preach about things like, to get his foot in the door, he would preach about things like stress, you know, becoming successful in your business, and, you know, how to win and influence people, basically speaking. And he was expert enough that he could take a subject like that and then turn it into Krishna consciousness. So my question is this, although I know it's a little bit long-winded, complicated, do you think that it would be advisable for devotees to utilize like the gospel of prosperity in some way to, you know, promote Krishna consciousness? Or should we concentrate, you know, just strictly on talking about pure bhakti, and those that will take?
No, what I think of right away is, of course, in chapters 4, 5, 6, right? Between Narada Muni and Vyasa. And because that's kind of what Vyasadeva did, you know? And he wrote so many different kinds of scriptures for people in the mode of ignorance to attract them. He wrote scriptures for people in the mode of passion to attract them, those in the mode of goodness. You know? And with that, he was playing with preaching Krishna consciousness. But it wasn't emphasized. Although, as far as I know, whatever I've seen, what I've heard, you know, it's there. There's no doubt about it. Shankaracharya, if you approach Buddha properly, he'll take it to Shankara. If you approach Shankara properly, he'll take it to Ramanuja. If you approach him, he'll take it to Madhva, he'll take it to Vachitanya. So if it's there, but because it's not, like, emphasized enough, and Narada Muni was saying it was condemned. You know? So I guess that's the whole thing. If it works, you know, that's our idea. Our idea is to go out and build bridges. They can reach people in any position like that. And of course, all they can understand is sometimes with material prosperity or mental peace or intellectual gratification. You know? And so the philosophy of Christian consciousness is so gratifying intellectually with different kinds of combinations and names and all this kind of stuff. And it works. Okay. You can apply it. Wow. So fun. You know? And so, yeah, I would say definitely.
Maharaj, can you hear us okay?
The gospel of prosperity, the gospel of peace, the gospel of, you know, of mystical yoga, whatever. Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit, yeah. But we can make it now.
Okay. So I think yes, but the only thing is to see how people are actually progressing.
Doesn't Radhana Swami kind of basically do the same thing in his preaching? Like he kind of reaches out to...
Yeah, to somewhat degree.
Yeah.
Although I think that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj really took it to another level, and he was successful at it.
Yeah, he was successful at it.
Yeah. It depends on the kind of people you're dealing with, you know? I mean, if you're dealing with a dog or a cat, you're not going to talk about you becoming a Madhyama Adhikari or something like that. But still, you can engage them, and they appreciate it, you know? Devotee association in your heart, you know. Yeah.
I think
so. Yeah, definitely.
I think what you said, I definitely agree with it. I think it's well said because I saw that. I hope I'm not offending you, but when I was in Detroit at the Detroit Temple, we really put a lot of endeavor and a lot of money, mostly Ambarish's money, into a certain type of preaching. And to a great extent, I don't know how successful it really was because we were coming from the point of promoting the opulence of the previous owner of the mansion and, you know, get people to come in and we would show the tours and stuff. We really didn't make a whole lot of devotees from it. I actually don't think any here. And also, I've seen other devotees. Even I had this philosophy to some extent. You know, I'm not immune from it. I was thinking that if we were really opulent, we would attract rich people and then therefore be able to spread Krishna consciousness. And I haven't ever seen that work. You know, people be...
Of course, the whole my The whole Mayapur project is based upon that idea, though, right? Prabhupada said you can sit in a grass hut, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, who will come. Well, people see big buildings and all these things, they'll come. Mm-hmm. But that's the trick then. You know, once you got them moving, to get them moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
The mode of ignorance and nothing's happening. The mode of passion, they have desires are moving, but that's the whole thing. The captain has to be able to know how to take the wind and use that to drive the boat in the direction he wants to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice,
Tim.
Wonderful answer. Thank you. So much.
That's the bottom top.
Ramananda, I also like, you know, like Mother Irmala and her preaching, because she takes it to the practical application of everyday life, Krishna consciousness, and the practical application to your everyday life. And no matter where you are in the ashram system, and so then you feel like you can be Krishna conscious wherever you are.
Maharaj, there's a question we have in the chat. I don't know. Harsh, do you want to go ahead and ask this? If we have Maharaj got time? Oh, okay. He says ask on my behalf. Okay. So I'll read this to you. Maharaj, what's the name of me? This philosophy is intellectually I think we lost
the call here. I don't know them. It's as hot as a potato.
Yeah, you're starting to pick up.
Okay, so I guess that's all. So, next week, well, I think we'll be at the ocean. There was a landslide. It's about three blocks away from our temple in Chosica, outside of Lima. Killed two people and dismissed the temple by 3 blocks. You know?
Wow.
Okay. So, if we're still alive next week, I think we'll be at the beach.
Okay. You're coming in clear now, Maharaj.
Okay. We should go anyway, too, because now we have this 12:30 here, and you have the noon program. There's going to be a wedding this afternoon. All these actually love the way these came. It's a very nice little project, many different good aspects like that. So we're trying to investigate. It's so much easier to do many things in the country like that. So easy. You know? Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Maharaj. May the impressions of the Lord's lotus feet be all over your house.
Jai. Hi.
Jai.
Haribol.
Jai.
Bhagavad
Shila Prabhupada.
Bhagavad Shila Prabhupada.
Jai Shila Prabhupada. Haribol.